This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Fed Access with Derek T. Dortch on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Derek walks you through how to win government jobs and contracts, effectively manage your government career, and best utilize government services. Every week on Fed Access, you'll learn about interesting federal agencies, workers, and jobs. Fed Access provides you the access you need to succeed in the federal government. And now your host, Derek T. Dortch.
Welcome to Fed Access with Derek T. Dortch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Thank you for stopping by the show. We always appreciate you listening. We're going to have another good show, as we always do. But today we're talking about clearances, security clearances. We've got one of our favorite guests on the line with us, Evan Lesser. He's the founder and director of ClearanceJobs.com, which is a job site that people with security clearances from confidential, secret, top secret, and above can get on there and post their resume, look for jobs, and talk to recruiters and all kind of good stuff. Evan, welcome back to Fed Access.
Hello, Derek. Good to talk with you.
Always, always. Hey, you know, you just had 10 years, Evan. I was out at your celebration at the National Stadium watching a good ball game and out there celebrating with you for 10 years of clearance jobs being around. One, congratulations on that and being around that long and having that staying power. And then two, I mean, what have you seen, Evan, in the last 10 years since you started clearance jobs? What's been kind of the transitions in the market, the trends?
First of all, thanks. I appreciate it. We're kind of happy to reach that milestone. I think the main thing that has really shifted is, you know, if you think about when we started in towards the beginning of 2002, September 11th was still, you know, extremely fresh in everyone's minds, and the atmosphere was extremely extremely serious, extremely urgent, and you know, there was a lot of people trying to figure out exactly what were we going to do. We knew that our intelligence assets would have to be increased, and that there'd be a lot more going on in that arena. But it was really a fair amount of uncertainty as to what was going to take off and what wasn't. But more than anything, you know, from a government budget perspective, everyone was all in. It was just you know, a time that we knew we had to spend. And we knew it was going to be expensive, but we knew it would be worth it over time. And, you know, fast forward 10 years, we've got one war pretty much done, the other one winding down. And the whole scope of national security has dramatically changed. If you think about what we're doing in cyber and how technology has evolved over the past 10 years and how easy it is for classified information to get, you know, taken and distributed. It's really an entirely different landscape. More than anything, I think heading into the kind of season of potential budget cuts, it's night and day compared to 10 years ago. 10 years ago, we had pretty much a free license to spend and do what we needed to secure the country. 10 years later, you know, we're in a bit of a jam, trying to figure out how we can get out from underneath the budget woes, but still keep the country safe.
Do you see, and you really can see it because you've seen the dynamics of hiring. I mean, and I know cyber is definitely the hot thing, and where it used to be, you know, maybe terrorism or, you know, terrorism, counterterrorism, and other things like that. Is it a balancing of some priorities? Because those things are still important. I mean, we still have the dynamic of terrorism, but are we becoming a lot more technical rather than boots on the ground? I mean, you know, where now it was, like you said, a full license to hire a little bit of everybody. And, you know, now are we swinging back to that day where we're looking more for those engineers and computer scientists where, at before we were looking for people who were going to be those intel people who were going to be on the ground or whoever, or people with clearances who were going to be in certain zones?
Yeah, I think you've pretty much hit on exactly what we've seen with a slight modification. I think back in 2002, some of the most frequently desired candidates on the clearance job site were in aerospace. we had employers that were looking for candidates with, you know, long careers in aerospace, engineering, aviation, avionics, satellite technology, et cetera. You know, a decade later, we see the need for that has still continued, but it's dropped off dramatically. At this point, the high need is for, as you mentioned, cybersecurity professionals. Intel is still extremely important, but a lot of it has shifted more towards technological side of things rather than, as you mentioned, boots on the ground. And past that, we see a lot of open positions for things like robotics and small electronics and counter IED, counter-terror. I mean, those are all the kind of things that, you know, a decade ago really didn't see any need for it, but now it's truly come to the forefront.
You know, in this whole piece of where, you know, you've got, like you said, the counter IED, the cyber and kind of countering the cyber threat and everything else, for those people who are maybe you're non-technical as much, is there an air of concern? I mean, people who, you know, are maybe even your administrative specialists, or maybe, you know, those who were accountants who had clearances or things like that. Are we seeing, I mean, because of the budget cuts, are we seeing kind of a scale back on those kind of positions and the need? Or do we still need the support positions as well as these highly technical positions?
Definitely still need the support positions. I think those are kind of the bread and butter clearance jobs, you know, administrative, contracts, budget, finance, program management, and then the, I guess, the general IT, the help desk, systems administrators, junior software developers, database administrator type of positions. Those bread and butter positions have always been around, and we anticipate to continue to be around. I think what employers are looking for a little bit more closely now is trying to find that perfect hire of someone who can really get in and really make a change on an organization. Mostly, we're hearing things to the effect of, we can't hire as many people as we did in the past, so we're really paying attention to skills and certifications, mm-hmm. and work history of a particular individual. Does that make sense?
It does make sense. And you lead me to my next question. With that, it seems to be that the environment is becoming more competitive. I mean, even though, you know, where, you know, it used to be that time, Evan, where if you had that clearance, you were automatically marketable, you know, and, you know, for some people, for some clearance levels, the highest levels of clearance, probably still may be the case. But as you get to maybe a secret, a top secret, where now that market is maybe a little bit more saturated, it seems that, you know, you just can't take your resume for granted. You can't just kind of go in there and just have job descriptive language and think that's going to automatically cut it. It's got to be something that sells you. You got to sell yourself a little bit more. Would you say that?
That's extremely true. You know, a decade ago, one of the hardest things for employers to deal with was the long processing time to obtain a security clearance. So the talent pool was fairly small. The number of jobs was blossoming. And most people who did not have a clearance, employers were really hesitant to put them through, at that point, the year-plus process to obtain one. So we can talk about it in a bit, but the clearance processing time has been reduced dramatically. But with that being the case, depending on what happens over the next 3 or 4 months with budget cuts and sequestration and who ends up being in the White House, there could be a fair amount of cleared individuals that are looking at joblessness for the first time in their career. And if that does happen, then you're correct. It's going to take much more than just saying you've got an active clearance on your resume to get you know, your foot in the door of certain companies and get interviews.
You know, that kind of is a scary time in even thinking about that. Do you see, I mean, is the, in a dynamics, now I know we'll talk about budget cuts very soon, but is the dynamics of the budget cuts looming, and even with the new presidential election, are a lot of people really just holding tight with hiring until we find out who the next president is? And is that really impacting hiring?
Some are, some are not. I think it's a mixed bag right now. We've talked to some employers that are still going gangbusters and hiring lots of folks and doing plenty of interviews and really out there trying to gather candidates as much as they can. Some smaller companies, though, are definitely holding back and being a little bit more picky. I think what we have heard is that contract awards are taking more time to actually be awarded, and employers have been waiting longer to hear back on contract wins. So it's definitely a different environment than it was a decade ago, where there was a lot of movement and everything was really going quickly. At this point, I do know that employers as well as the workforce are expressing higher concerns over canceled projects or loss of contract funding. Those are some studies and surveys we've done and found that to be increasing.
You know, we'll talk about that a little bit more as we can close the show out. I want you to maybe give some advice for those people who are with clearances and who may be facing this dynamic of, we don't want anybody to be joblessness, but maybe preparation, in the face of these times is really the key. I want to talk about that as we close the show out. But we got two other things to talk about before then. We're going to talk about security clearances and wait times. And I also want to talk about budget cuts and the impact of them also on other agencies and what you're seeing. We're talking to Evan Lesser. He is the founder and director of ClearanceJobs.com. They just celebrated their 10th year being around. The site has evolved, has become much better, many more tools to help job seekers. You can find it at ClearanceJobs.com. We'll be right back after this break. We're talking about clearances and what they can do for you, the impact on the budget cuts and everything else. You listen to Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Welcome back to Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. If you just joined us, we're talking about security clearances, and we have one of our favorite guests on with us, Evan Lesser. He's founder and director of ClearanceJobs.com. They are a job site that where you can find basically jobs that, for security clearances from confidential, secret, top secret, and on up. So if you have one of those clearances, you may want to put yourself out there and begin looking for a new position, a new job with a new contractor and a new government agency. You've got both of them on the site, right, Evan? Government agencies as well as contractors, and not just contractors on there, right?
That's right. Yeah, at this point, both are on.
Okay, good. You guys just released something called Hurry Up and Wait, about security clearance wait times, still kind of frustrating hiring managers. OPM released, more kind of good news saying, hey, the security clearance process had really been cut down and things are on time and this, that, and the other. So you're kind of saying something counter. I mean, what have you found?
Well, I should start off by saying that the government has definitely made some huge improvements in the end-to-end clearance processing time. I think when you compare today versus 5 or even 10 years ago, it really is almost night and day. But the key figure that came out of our survey on clearance wait times was that about 48% of the employers we polled said that they've lost some highly qualified applicants who actually pulled themselves from consideration due to the time delay in obtaining a clearance. So while the wait times are down, some of them can still take a fairly long time depending on the background of the candidate, and even at the most average time of being around 4 months or so, there are plenty of candidates who simply pull themselves out of consideration at some point in the process.
So, with that, what are we seeing? With these wait times and with this going on, are we seeing a dynamic of more of an overload situation? Are we seeing because of maybe budget cuts, we've got less background investigators? Where is the disconnect right now?
Well, I think the thing to keep in mind is that most companies, when they are hiring for an existing position that's open. It's very rare that they are hiring for something that's going to be open in 3 or 4 months. They usually look at their hiring timelines and tend to focus on bringing candidates in right about the time that they get a clearance award. Some are looking ahead of time and doing some networking, but when it gets down to the actual hiring and talking to candidates that are ready to go, it's pretty much a last-minute thing. With that in mind, even if the government got the clearance processing time down to 2 months, 2.5 months on average, that would still be a long time for some employers that need candidates on the job immediately. So, about 63% of the employers that we polled said that they had seen improvements in the clearance processing times, but it kind of still doesn't change the fact that their recruiting tactics and mentality haven't changed. And with that in mind, lower waiting times for clearance still doesn't make non-cleared candidates a viable option.
Right. And I guess I was going to ask that. I mean, are we talking about just fresh new candidates who maybe a contractor says, you know what, you got the skill set that I'm looking for? And is this also kind of, especially as we begin looking at the cyber dynamic, where we may not have had enough cyber professionals, are we seeing these lag times there mostly? Or like these, you know, these technical people, these engineers or computer scientists or IT specialists, are we seeing that being the problem mainly?
I think there's a few things at play. One of the things that is definitely in there is the fact that, again, you know, while the processing times have been improved, employers and recruiters, their tactics and their mindset have not changed. When we did our survey, we found out that about 56% of the employers we polled said that they still only consider candidates with active or current clearance. You know, they really cannot look at someone that does not have a clearance. And even though the times have been improved dramatically, 56% is still a pretty large number. The other thing that's in play is the fact that with, you know, the country being, at whatever point you want to say, in this recession, they're finding more and more people with clearance that have some type of financial problems. And as we kind of mentioned in the past, any type of financial difficulty is definitely going to be something that could potentially cause an investigation to go longer, you know, and might actually add to the delay. So oftentimes we hear about employers where they knew that there was some financial history that was not completely favorable, and at some point in the investigation, the candidate either gets spooked because of the delay and pulls out, or the employer gets worried because it's been more months than the average.
And with the employer having more months, I mean, are we seeing more kind of a rescinding of offer type scenario, and they go look for another candidate? Or, I mean, how does that usually work with some of these contractors? You know, I mean, that's the difference between a contractor, because they need to get somebody on right away in order to, you know, have them start being billed out for this contract, where a government agency can hold and, you know, kind of, you know, work with you, and it can be 6 months, you know, because they're not necessarily about this urgency scenario. What are we seeing?
Well, you know, the employers we talk to, they have a pretty consistent word. While improvements in the end-to-end processing time have definitely been made, there are still some not-so-rare cases of candidates taking far longer than that. In a survey that we did earlier this year, we had about 30% of respondents reported a wait time of 5 to 8 months for their clearance award. These are actual candidates who received it. About 6% reported a 9 to 11 month time frame, and a pretty good 11% of candidates that we polled earlier this year reported a wait time of a year or more for their security clearance. And we were talking to people that had received it in the past 12 months. So employers often come to us and they say, boy, this candidate looks great. We would love to be able to process them for the clearance, but what if they turn out to be the one that takes 8, 9, 10, 11 months? It happens.
You know, is this a dynamic where, and I'm thinking about kind of solutions, Evan. I mean, do maybe companies need to probably do some kind of pre-clearance counseling with somebody to kind of see? I mean, are there some things that can be seen on somebody's SF-86, the National Security Questionnaire, that can be automatically seen as red flags to say, listen, you had a bankruptcy, or you had this, that, and the other, or, you know, your travel went to this country, and that's going to cause you to be a little bit longer. Are there certain red flags that we can, you know, predetermine that's going to take a little bit longer?
You know, Derek, I don't have a very solid read on it, but I do know that some employers do a fairly standard background check on candidates before they decide to put them through the entire end-to-end clearance process. I don't know how many do that, but I would have to assume in today's day and age, where having financial trouble is something that is really fairly common, I could see more and more employers actually having to do some type of a pre-screening as candidates come in the door.
Well, you know, well, that is, and I just got to be upfront with people, is that scenario with this pre-screening, and, you know, as employers begin looking at people, will that you know, automatically say, hey, listen, if we see something that is a really, really big red flag, we may not be able to go forward with you? I mean, are we getting to that point?
I think we are, and I think that type of thing has already been happening. I'm not sure how many employers actually come out and say overtly, you know, you filed for bankruptcy 6 months ago, and we've noticed that you had some foreign travel and whatever else the case may be, and you know, we're going to decide to go with someone else. I don't know if they overtly say that, but most savvy employers are surely looking at that type of thing and trying to weigh the pros and cons to see if the person that they're interested in hiring would truly pan out. There's nothing more expensive than trying to bring someone on board and after X number of months finding out that they were not able to get a final clearance.
You know, and you also mentioned something else about people who already have clearances. Is there more and more of a concern, especially in the financial climate where, you know, people have been underwater because of the mortgage crisis or whatever? Are we getting concerned about the current cleared people who are out there, that as they're going, you know, for their 5-year renewal or whatever, are we seeing that there's a number of people who clearances are possibly in jeopardy?
Oh, completely. And more than anything, the concern from candidates is definitely at an all-time high. You know, when a periodic reinvestigation comes about, candidates come to us and talk to us fairly worried, saying, you know, 5 years ago, my clearance was fine, but now it's been a completely different world for me, you know, financially. And finances, you know, issues with finances can lead to other things that could potentially mar someone's chances of remaining suitable for a clearance. So that is truly on the increase.
You know, when we come back, I got to take a quick break. When we come back, I just kind of want to talk about, before we talk about budget cuts, maybe what should people be doing, you know, in order, because this is serious business, as you know, because we don't want anybody to have to, you know, either go for that 5-year renewal and then lose their clearance, which lose their, you know, employability in that market, which is, you know, is very, very good to have. And we definitely want to make sure that people who are looking to get into this market also can make themselves more clearable. I want to talk about that first before we just jump into what's going on with the budget cuts and what the impacts are. We're talking to Evan Lesser. He is the founder and director of clearancejobs.com. You can find it, as the name says, clearancejobs.com. You can find it on the web at clearancejobs.com. Great site for those people who have clearances, who are looking to get into either, you know, government contractors who require clearances or government agencies who are looking for a certain kind of talent. We'll be right back after this break. We're talking about the clearance process and much more. Listen to Fed Access with Derek T. Dortch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Welcome back to Fed Access with Derek T. Dortch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. If you just joined us, we're talking about security clearances today. I'm talking about a couple different things, about what's going on with the security clearance market, talking about the wait times seem to have kind of maybe kind of trickled up a little bit with getting security people cleared or people also being re-cleared, talking about some concerns in the clearance market with some people who already have clearances and now they're getting reinvestigated, and there may be some jeopardy with their clearances because of financial times, financial decisions that have been made, and now their clearances may be in trouble, and how this is impacting the market. Evan, you know, for a person, and let's look at it from two different ways. And I don't know if I said this, we're talking to Evan Lesser. He's a founder and director of clearancejobs.com. But Evan, look at this two different ways. For the person who's trying to get into the clearance market, what should they be thinking about in terms of making sure that they're clearable? And then for the person who's already cleared, who may have made some maybe bad decisions, some financial decisions didn't go completely right, or the mortgage crisis kind of took them by surprise and got them upside down, what should they be doing in order to keep themselves clearable?
Well, I think for someone that would be undergoing the clearance process for the first time from scratch, it surely can't hurt to do some reading and do some investigation beforehand to try to learn exactly what would cause someone to be denied a clearance. There are a lot of good books out there. Our friend William Henderson, who does a lot of writing on the subject, has some excellent books that talk about suitability for security clearances. And, you know, frankly, there are some people that are going to be perfectly fine, and there are others that have, you know, very little chance of obtaining a clearance. So if you're going to put yourself through the process, do the research first, take a look at what could cause a denial, and see if that is something that pertains to you. If it doesn't, proceed ahead. If it does, it may be something you want to reconsider. As far as someone that has an existing clearance and may be undergoing a reinvestigation, it is surely important to check their credit score, make sure that everything is in order. If there have been any financial difficulties, to make sure that everything they've done to remedy them is fully documented, as that will definitely be something that will be brought up on the reinvestigation. It really is important to show those proactive steps for someone that may have had some type of financial difficulty. There are other areas as well. We talk about legal issues, psychological counseling, all sorts of other things that can be involved. But if you're undergoing a reinvestigation, before it happens, it's smart to get all your information together, everything on order, and that way you can very quickly answer to some of the things that may pop up.
So really what we're saying is for both parties, I mean, some due diligence in terms of making, you know, maybe for the person who is going for the security clearance process, do you always recommend maybe, you know, filling out the SF-86 ahead of time for those people who may be interested to see if there's any concerns that they may have before even, you know, starting this process? And for those who are, you know, going for reinvestigation, you may embark upon just investigating yourself and making sure that there are no things that can come up and hurt you.
Very much so. And you know, as we mentioned on our call earlier, you know, employers can get frustrated or spooked or have problems with a candidate that they may be waiting on for the first go-round to obtain a clearance if it takes longer than the average. They may wonder what's going on, what's happening in the investigation, what the investigator might have found in someone's past that could be causing a delay. But if someone is undergoing the process, if they have all the information together ahead of time, they may even want to go as far as anything that could be a concern, taking a look at some of the legal rulings to try to figure out if they're going to potentially be in trouble or not with whatever that issue might be. There's a lot of information that's out there, not much of it that's published by the government, but there are plenty of legal cases. There are plenty of books and information out there that can kind of help someone understand where they may sit. A lot of the employers that are talking to candidates may not completely know whether someone's background would result in a clearance denial or not, but if a candidate is up on it, they can let the employer know, hey, you may have a concern about this, but you know, these other certain things are in place that should make this a non-issue, that type of thing.
Got you. You know, let's go to the budget cuts. And you know, there's been talk about budget cuts, you know, for quite some time. And definitely some people have definitely been feeling the crunch. Where are we seeing the budget cuts have the most impact at? Is it the intelligence budget? Is it, you know, aircraft care? I mean, is it aircraft carriers? Is it, you know, aircrafts or special weapons? I mean, where are we seeing these cuts at? And are we seeing any kind of anybody receiving any kind of windfall?
Well, I think you know, most of the budget cuts that have been talked about, you know, are coming from the DoD budget. Very rarely do you hear or see anything about budgets from the intel agencies, and to some degree the Department of Homeland Security. But the majority of budget cuts are going to come from the Pentagon, and that's really where some of the largest you know, single big ticket items are. You know, the easiest, I think the largest things that are most targetable would be the large aerospace projects. Those have a high ticket cost. They go on for many years of development. And as time moves on, more and more agencies are wondering if, you know, the very expensive, you know, new fighter jets, new technology is the type of thing that is going to help us stay safe. So I think, you know, what may be targeted would be some of the larger big-ticket items. I don't think you're going to see a whole lot of pushback on spending for cybersecurity and for intelligence. You know, IT could be one area where we see not necessarily a cutback, but simply slower growth. Government IT has a huge weight upon it, and there's plenty of upgrades that could happen across the government. But it's not cheap, that's for sure. So I would tend to think that there would be slower growth there as well.
You know, I would assume over these past few years, the population of some of those people who have been working in clearance jobs are starting to get older. Are we starting to see any retirements, or are we seeing people hold on? I mean, in the face of these budget cuts, are we seeing people even, you know, become a little bit more entrenched rather than retiring? Or what do you kind of what's your indicators look at?
Well, 6 years ago, I think, you know, the trend of baby boomers starting to retire was something that was a fair concern. Everyone was worried about a brain drain. They were worried about people who had a lot of experience taking their clearances, retiring, and those people not necessarily being replaced. At this point, we're finding really that more and more folks over 50 are staying in the job market, and for obvious reasons. So, you know, I don't think that that's really as much of a concern anymore now as it was in the past. But I do know that just like other sectors of the U.S. economy, employers are wrestling with keeping the older tenured worker who may cost more versus someone who is younger or less experienced, but costs significantly less.
Right, right, right. That's real talk right there. And you know, for some people who are thinking about that, with these budget cuts looming, are you starting to hear from employers that, you know, these are some strategic decisions in terms of talent management and talent that they're making, that they're deciding, well, listen, we can get three new graduates who are newly out of a new cyber program for the one person that I have who, you know, has been working in this thing for quite some time. Are you starting to hear that?
Yeah, to some degree. I think, you know, understandably so, most contractors chase the budget dollars, and they go where the budget dollars are. That said, you know, an area like cybersecurity is a great example. There's plenty of budget being put towards it. There's a lot of room for growth, and as far as the most skilled professionals, you know, the majority are going to be, you know, 40, under 40. So, you know, a lot of the technology that's out and that's changing is really geared towards a younger talent base. So, you know, it's a mixed bag at this point. I think that employers tend to look for positions, you know, where they know that there's going to be ongoing budget dollars. Another example might be working for the NSA, any of the agencies that sit at Fort Meade. There's a ton of budget money that's really being put towards what they're doing. The only problem that we've seen is that in their case, the majority of open positions require a TSSCI with a lifestyle polygraph. That's an extremely small talent pool of people. And when you get into increasing number of positions with a fairly small talent pool, you've got a situation where candidates are kind of in the driver's seat and able to command what they want.
You know, I want to take a quick break, but when we come back, I want to, because this really kind of leads into the last part of the conversation I want to have with you today, is about people's careers. Because I think for some people listening, there's a little bit of career survival that has to go on with these budget cuts, with the dynamic of, you know, maybe the older population thinking, I want to stay in the market, but how do I stay in the market? I mean, how do I continue to make myself marketable when they may be looking for younger and the person who has a different skill set that I have and everything else? And then also what we were talking about, how to make yourself more competitive with the resume, what you're seeing and what's required to make yourself more competitive. I want to talk about that in a little bit more when we come back. We're talking to Evan Lesser. He is the founding director of clearancejobs.com. They are the site where you can post your resume. If you've got a clearance, confidential, secret, top secret, or above, you can post your resume and talk to recruiters, defense contractors, homeland security contractors, and more people who are looking for clearances and government agencies as well. We'll be right back after this break. We're talking about the clearance process and the impacts of the budget cuts and much more on it. We'll be right back. You're listening to Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Welcome back to Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. If you just joined us, we are talking about clearances and talking about the impact of security clearance wait times on clearances and the process on defense contractors, homeland security contractors, talking about budget cuts and the impact of those, talking about the careers of people with clearances and talking about what can they anticipate going into the rest of this year, into 2013, and how can people start thinking about career survival as some of these budget cuts are having maybe a negative impact on some people. We're talking to Evan Lesser. He is a founder and director of clearancejobs.com, one of our favorite guests to have on Fed Access. And we're talking about all these issues and much more. Evan, you know, we were speaking about this changeover. Maybe the population over 50 who has clearances may need to have a little bit of concern. We don't want to scare anybody, but we want to take this serious, that they may have something to be concerned about as companies begin looking at the dollars and thinking, maybe I can get a couple more younger people rather than having this person who's making this large salary. I can get a couple younger people and pay them much less and then bring in some new skill set. For the person who is above 50 or wherever they're at, a little bit more of a seasoned employee, I should say, what should they be thinking about? What should they be doing right now, Evan?
Well, I think there are a few things that can be done, and they really apply to everyone, definitely the over 50 crowd, but they really could be useful for anyone. The main thing to keep in mind is that compared to a decade ago, where there were a ton of open jobs and not nearly enough candidates to fill them, we've gotten to the point now where with budget cuts looming, there's going to be potentially fewer open jobs, and the market of cleared people, the talent pool, will be larger. Depending on what happens with sequestration and the rest of this year and potential cuts, there could be a fair number of people that would be coming into the market with clearances and being job hunters. With that in mind, I think that anyone would do themselves a favor by spending time building their own personal brand. We actually talk about a fair amount on the Clearance Jobs site about your own self-promotion, the importance of the business of you. And that personal branding is actually quite important. What employers look for once they found a group of people that have the right clearance level and the right skill set is who would fit best within their organization. Having a hire that they make, the money and time involved with that, and then having that hire leave the position or get fired within a few months of starting is a huge burden on organizations. There's a psychological and morale impact, and then obviously a financial impact. So one of the things that we're encouraging candidates to do, and then at least our site is trying to foster, is letting employers know more about you, what goes kind of beyond the resume. So letting employers know what events you're attending, what you're reading, what classes you may be taking, how you interact with your current coworkers, what things have you done on the job that have had a significant impact. These are not necessarily tangible things that sit on a resume. These are the type of things that have to be described a little bit more. And having a more in-depth kind of 3D profile is really the way to do that and really give employers more meat and more information about who you are and how you'd fit in their organization.
You know, is it too late? And maybe and I would hope it's never too late. But is it too late for a person who now is thinking about, who's a little bit more seasoned worker? Is it too late for them to compete against the younger worker who is coming in with kind of the new skills, this, that, and the other? Would employers take them serious if they've gone back to school, got maybe some new certificates or things like that? Or are they just going to say, you know what, you're making too much money, we're still going to go with these younger employees?
Well, every organization has its own personality, and within organizations there are sometimes multiple subsets of personalities. And sometimes an older, more seasoned worker may be a better fit. Sometimes it could be a younger type of audience, but it really depends on the position and on the organization themselves. We have employers that just look across the board. Most of them don't pay attention to age right off the bat. They're more interested in trying to figure out, once they get past the clearance and the skill set, is this someone that's going to be a good match for my organization? Are they going to fit in well with me and my coworkers?
you know, with the resume and thinking about the resume, what should somebody be doing? Because we're in a market now, it seems that we're becoming a lot more competitive without question. Over these past 10 years, you've seen the market kind of this shrinkage now with these budget cuts and everything else, and where clearances used to be just kind of the indoor. Now it's not that way anymore. So a person, you know, with their resume, they can't just be job descriptive anymore. What are you suggesting?
You know, the main things that we suggest would be to show your personality, show your likes, your dislikes, show what motivates you. You know, get into more detail about your education, your future plans for education, training, and certification. There's a lot of things that you can do that really give an employer more color and flavor as to who you are. I think the days of the static, bullet by bullet resume are pretty much over, if not getting close to that point. So really need to find tools and mechanisms where a candidate can go beyond the resume and really let employers know who they are. It's very comforting when an employer can get that additional information, because they're always trying to figure out, if they're holding two or three resumes in front of them, who can they discount? It's very important for them to make not just a hire, but the right hire. And that additional information can go a long way to helping them make that right hire.
You know, Evan, what you're saying is kind of going counter to what many and you see in this, because you're talking to employers. But a person hearing this would say this goes counter to what I'm reading in books about resumes, about keeping it short and keeping it simple and all this other kind of stuff. It's one page dynamic. I mean, are you seeing employers really saying, you know what, I do want to take the time and see what this person is about, you know, just beyond just the bullet points or beyond the keywords? Is that what you're seeing?
Very much so. And I can give you a good example. Software developers are in high demand. They have been for many, many years. And it's a great place where an employer can have the ability to compare candidates against each other. You think about what is going to be more attractive to an employer, to a recruiter. A standard resume with bullet by bullet, here's where I worked, here's what I did, here's where I went to school, here's the information that I learned, or taking a look at that information plus code samples from a person, problems that they've run into at their organization that they helped solve, going out to external sites like GitHub and seeing some of the coding work that they've done, questions that they've answered on sites like Quora and others, how they've interacted with their own community of software developers. Now, that can be done through any position, not just a software developer, but it's a good example of an employer really trying to take a look at two different people and decide who are they going to pick up the phone and call. And if they can find someone that has a pretty deep digital footprint, and they can really see who they are and how engaged they are and actually see examples of their work, that's going to be far more of a good selling point than someone that just has the bullets on their resume.
So personal branding is kind of the key message for the day. Is that what you say?
That is truly it.
All right. Evan, thanks so much. Always a pleasure to have you on the show. Always good advice. We definitely will be talking to you in the next, several weeks again as things evolve. Definitely as the presidential election takes place, and then we kind of have a little bit more clarity on that, we definitely will want to know where the clearance market is going. So thank you so much for coming on Fed Access.
My pleasure, Derek.
You've been listening to Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear it in its entirety on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch, Friday afternoons at noon, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM, WFED, your source for federal news now.